The Mormon Channel presents Mormon Identities, a program about real Latter-day Saints as they live the restored gospel of Jesus Christ in the world today. The gospel shapes our identity and serves as a common thread in the other factors that help define who we are. We will explore these factors and discuss topics about our community and culture, scripture and doctrine, and life experiences and challenges. Mormon Identities, here on the Mormon Channel.
Welcome to Mormon Identities, a program about Latter-day Saints, who we are, what we believe, and how we live. I am your host, Eric Huntsman, and for today's program, we have another Life Challenges and Experiences episode, this time, Christmas with Autism. Our guests today are Katie Steed and Robin Anderson. Katie works with BYU's Department of Counseling, Psychology, and Special Education. When she was working on her master's, her thesis was entitled Instructing Teachers of Children with Disabilities Within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Robin Anderson is a private practitioner or therapist. She's the director of ASD Connections, a private foundation raising money to help families with children with autism have the resources for therapies that their children need, and she also directs Autism Links, which provides public, private, and home therapies. Now, this episode is called Christmas with Autism, but I don't want to keep it too narrow. This is a follow-up to an earlier episode we had on autism and the church, and hopefully it's the first of several episodes about special needs. We want to look at our children and our adults who have particular challenges and how we within the LDS community work to help them develop. So although we're going to be talking about the challenges that the Christmas holidays present to children with autism, we want to have in the back of our mind that the happiest of all holidays can be a very difficult one for people with various kinds of challenges, psychological or emotional disorders, depression, people who are alone, etc. So let me talk for a little bit about my family's situation. Our previous episode featured, in addition to Robin, Tina Dykes from BYU, a psychologist, and my wife. And my wife was here as the mother of a child with autism. And we talked quite a bit about our son's situation and his progress. But as we were looking for holiday episodes this year, I wanted to develop something that I blogged about online last year, which was the experience our family had with Samuel as we moved into December. Although we look back now and can see many features of autism in Samuel as a baby and as a young toddler, he really manifested the most obvious characteristics at 3.5 or 4. And our family, like many families, has rich Christmas traditions, lots of things we like to do. And when it had just been us or us and Rachel, our older daughter, this was so wonderful, so spiritual, so moving, so happy. And at about 3, and then certainly when he was 4, everything we tried to do crashed and burned. Putting up the Christmas tree, which was supposed to be exciting, was disturbing to him. The music was different. We have a tradition of a Christmas Eve picnic where we make different kinds of foods and hors d'oeuvres and sit on the floor rather than at the table. And it's just something special. And he's screamed. We had to take him out of the room. We tried to give him all these gifts, and it was a sensory overload. And I felt like Christmas was never going to be happy again. That my daughter was going to be deprived of this wonderful set of traditions we developed for her. Selfishly, I thought, this is my spiritual time, and instead I have a child who is just screaming and isn't happy. He likes candy. I think the only traditional Christmas food he liked was candy, and like any child, typical or with autism, the sugar just made the matter worse. So, Katie, talk to us a little bit about what aspects of autism can make holidays, not just Christmas, but holidays particularly problematic.
You know, it's interesting. I was just doing a lecture to some special educators yesterday who are very familiar with children with autism. And we were talking about the different characteristics and things that students with autism have. And when I got to the point of they like a routine, they all were just, you know, saying, oh, yes, that is the truest of any symptom. You know, there might be some characteristics that some individuals with autism have and some don't. But that routine is certainly something students with and children with autism really appreciate and really enjoy. And they like kind of their rituals and they like life to kind of be similar. And when things are different, that can really throw them off. And you can imagine what life is like during the holidays.
Right.
You know, nothing's the same. You know, so many things are so different. And you know, you pull out a big Christmas tree and you put it out. And that is so different. And why are we putting this out? And trees belong outside. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't belong inside.
And so you move a chair or the TV to put the tree there.
Sure.
And they're afraid that's not coming back.
Sure, sure. And it's not their comfort. It's not the routine that they find comfort and security in. And so that's really a challenge for them. And they're trying to make sense of that. And so those are things that can be really difficult for students. And when you think about Christmas especially, and we're trying to take them to parties, and there's so much stimulus of interacting with other people, that's a real difficult thing we're putting upon
them. You know, you said
them.
Stimulus, and I think we can look at that two different ways. You said stimulus with interacting with other people, and I think probably the common denominator with people on the spectrum of autism is this challenge they have of understanding people socially, interacting with people socially. So you're putting them in social situations, often with strangers.
Right.
But there's stimulus of all kinds. And, of course, we established in our last program, you've met one child with autism, you've met one child. They're all different. It's a spectrum. But very frequently, children with autism manifest various aspects of sensory processing disorder, SPD. And so the lights, flashing lights, we have a tradition that we take our family up the first Saturday of December to buy a new figure for our nativity, and we go to a store that features holiday lights and things, and he did not get 5 feet in that store before he began to scream.
Right.
And this was our favorite thing to do, but the lights and the trains and everything, it was just too much. But SPD can manifest itself in other ways. Tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And Samuel has this incredibly keen nose. His mother calls it his bionic nose. Because this is an interesting thing about children with autism. They frequently have very strong senses. Their brain just doesn't know how to process all that stimulus. And so much of our taste is actually based on smell. You know, so there are all kinds of things. Robin, what other kinds of things are problematic for children with ASD, autism spectrum disorder?
The reason we celebrate Christmas, it's a religious holiday. Religion is very hard for kids on the spectrum.
It's abstract, isn't it?
Very abstract, and you can't feel faith necessarily. Or you do feel faith, you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. A lot of the, you know, we can have a lesson about the true meaning of Christmas and that type of thing, and a child with autism just doesn't understand that. And if a child with autism doesn't understand why something is being done, it's even harder for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are they trying to put up with the extra noises, music, bells,
sounds,
lights, all that type of stuff, but they're also not understanding the purpose behind it. Why is everyone singing?
So as believing people, as people of faith, when we do what we think is most critical, celebrate the real meaning of Christmas, that can be lost on a child with autism.
Absolutely.
If we're not careful.
Right. Because it's so abstract.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, ladies, what kind of strategies can families employ then?
I think, you know, help the child to understand what's going to happen. You know, I think if we see that a child is struggling with reading, we know we're going to tutor them and help them and give all the support that we can to help them be successful in reading. Well, if a child with autism is struggling with those social skills or struggling with those rituals and change in tradition, change in rituals, then we want to teach them that. We want to say, you know, something's going to be different, and it's going to be okay, and this is what's going to be different, and here's our schedule for this day. You know, this is what our schedule normally looks like, but this is how our schedule is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we take it upon ourselves to be very proactive in our approach to help them appreciate, and this is why people put up Christmas lights, and really help them to understand that instead of just, well, every kid just naturally loves this, so why don't you love it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but help them to make sense and make And do that by directly teaching them those skills.
Robin?
And teaching your family and friends about things that they can do to help prepare your child. Telling them, you know, if we have to leave early from this family party, it's not because we don't love the family. It's because my child needs this, you know, we're going to stay an hour instead of 3 hours at this. Maybe we'll come late once everyone's in and settled and leave early. Or maybe we come early, but while the room's still quiet.
Well, and I would put a big shout out for the come early, because I know Elaine's experience with Samuel in things like just routine ward meetings. If she could get him there before the chapel filled, he could find an accustomed spot, get settled, recognize and feel comfortable, then as it filled up, it wasn't as bad. And, of course, at the party, you have the option that you don't always have in sacrament is you can leave when you hit that point where the toleration has been reached, right?
Right.
You know, you mentioned talk to your family and friends. This isn't necessarily holiday related, but we have a group of friends that we do things with occasionally. We've tried to do things with the families. And I had, to a certain extent, always resisted bringing the children because I knew it would be difficult for Samuel. But my friends were wonderful. They talked to their children in advance. The children all understood that Samuel was different about some things. You know, we went on a trip to Vernal to Dinosaur Land as families, and we've had parties at one of our friends' homes. And the children all gave him the space he needed but invited him, but if he didn't want to come. And one of my friends has a son mildly affected by Asperger's. And these two boys, I mean, one's 12 and one's 7, they have bonded. They bring their Nintendo DSs to these parties and they link them, however they do that with Wi-Fi or whatever. And then they do what they're comfortable doing on a side of the room while everyone else is doing something. And because everyone knows this, they're not trying to force them into doing something else. So I think that's a wonderful point, Robin.
In talking to a lot of the parents that I work with, they made several points that just really made me go, yeah, that's exactly how it should be. Holidays are about family. Your child with autism is part of your family. So being understanding that some things are going to work and some things are not going to work because of this disability, but being okay with that, not feeling guilty about any adjustments you have to make, not feeling guilty that you can't do everything that maybe you did as a child and kept up with some of those traditions, but also understanding that the traditions are important. They're important to your other children without the disability. Keep trying them. One family I worked with, it took 9 years for their son to be okay with Grandpa dressing up as Santa Claus on New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve. They kept trying. They kept trying, and they didn't feel guilty about having to leave. Or Grandpa understood that when it's time for this child to get their gift, you have to take your costume off.
And then come in and hand it to him.
And then
I have a gift for you.
Right. So he understands that it's Grandpa, not...
You know, it's interesting because if you do it piecemeal, that sometimes works. This isn't holiday specific, but family night was always a disaster in our home. Now, Rachel, she loved it. We had a song. We had a prayer. We had a lesson. We had an activity. And this was difficult for me because I love music and I love to sing. And so when we would sing as a family, I'd sing with my tabernacle choir voice, you know, and it just killed Samuel. He'd cover his ears, whatever. But what we did is we had Samuel come for the parts of family night he wanted to be for. So we didn't like sitting there singing a song together with the piano playing, but he loved the family night song. This is the night we waited for, and he loved to run around. So our family ritual now is Dad and Sam run around the living room and the kitchen together until he literally falls on the floor. That's when we pray. We do his lesson from the friend, and then he can go play his computer because we could not deprive Rachel of the more formal family night experience that she benefited from. Now, little by little, now he will stay for the family song outside of the opening race, you know, and we found that happen at Christmas, too. And Dad learned he couldn't sing so loudly because he didn't react to Mom and Rachel's voice. So I have to always make sure I'm singing a little softer than he does. So don't give up. I think that was a wonderful point.
Right, and taking into account that, like you started a new family home naming tradition. There's some things about Christmas that you have to adjust enough that it's now a new tradition. One family I spoke with said a lot of families travel around on Christmas to different grandparents on Christmas Day. Well, their tradition, since their youngest of, you know, four or five kids was the one with autism, once he got around, he came around, they decided that, you know what, we have to stay home all day Christmas Day. It's just impossible to travel around. So their new tradition, which their other kids absolutely love now, and their oldest is 22, I think, they all make it a point to stay home all day Christmas Day in their pajamas. And that's a tradition. They had to tweak it a little bit, but now they love it. And there's lots of different aspects or different traditions that can be tweaked for your child with autism that your family will learn to love because holidays are about family.
Now, Katie, you mentioned, I think Robin followed up with this as well, that they like routine and you can exploit that. And so you talked about we're going to be putting up Christmas lights. We're going to put up the tree. One of the things Robin, who's also happens to be our resource coordinator and helps us with Samuel, taught us early on was don't ever let anything be a surprise for Samuel. And so we have a big calendar on the wall. And we talk days in advance about what's going to happen. We made a whiteboard for morning, afternoon, evening for every day of the week. We have little magnets. We show what's going to happen. And so we not only said we're going to put up the Christmas tree. We said a week from today, we're putting up the Christmas tree. Six days from today, we're putting up the Christmas tree. So that wasn't as much of a change. We're going to move the furniture, but on New Year's Day, and point on the calendar, we're moving it back. Right. You know, and so you can kind of exploit their need for ritual and routine. Now, this is pretty idiosyncratic to the Huntsman family, but we celebrate a modified form of Advent. It's kind of a Germanic or Catholic or Lutheran tradition, but it's just the idea that the four Sundays before Christmas, you light one of four candles and you sing a song in our house very softly. You read a scripture, whatever. And you know, so we when Sam had his bad year four, we kind of just scuttled everything. But when at his fifth year, we explained what we were doing and that these candles represented hope, love, joy, peace. And then Christmas, we lit the candle on Christmas Eve. And we had described it so much that, you know, he kind of went along with it. Well, when he was six and we were pulling out the Christmas stuff, and we told him this is the Saturday we're pulling out the Christmas stuff, he saw those Advent candles in the wreath and he said, hope, love, joy, peace, Christmas. It's almost Christmas. And so we had taken something which actually allowed him to count down as we were getting ready for Christmas. Now, we had a more traditional Advent calendar like a lot of LDS families and American families do in general. That was wonderful. Each day, he and Rachel, after family prayer, could pull out an item and put it either on the tree or in the manger. And it was another way to kind of get him moving, moving towards Christmas. Any thoughts along those lines of things families can do? You've said it needs to be individual. I mean, families need to craft these for
themselves. Right, and every child is different. If you have a child that understands more of the social but just isn't comfortable with a lot of it, or what your goals are. If your goal is for your child to be more social, if you're at the aspect where I really want to push this, then make sure your child understands a purpose for whatever you're doing. If you're going to a family party, well, what's the purpose? Since they don't necessarily love going around and chatting with everybody, then maybe make a checklist of things that would make sense to them. Okay, go find one person with a red shirt and have them sign this paper. Go find someone eating a cookie and have them sign it. Mm-hmm. Just think of different ways you can make their environment make sense to them and concrete, make it not abstract.
This is Robin's magic checklist feature. I remember when we mainstreamed Samuel into kindergarten, and he learned to read very early, and he's a very visual learner, but he doesn't really follow verbal instructions. And Robin had suggested to Elaine and to his kindergarten teacher that they have a checklist or the teacher write on the board exactly what was going to happen in order. Mm-hmm. And it worked so well that other children would turn to Samuel, what's next? You know, because he had his checklist. Well, this blessed our Christmas 2 years ago. And it was my sweet daughter, Rachel, who is Samuel's best therapist. She loves her little brother. She understands him. And she was spiritually gifted, I believe, to help him. And she said, Dad, Samuel's having such a hard time with Christmas Eve and Christmas Day because he doesn't know what's going to happen. Let's go make a checklist. Mm-hmm. And so Rachel helped me make a checklist of every single thing we did on Christmas Eve day. Making the luminarias, and we had to say, fold the bags, put the sand in, put the candles. Mama's making special food, special dinner on the floor, Christmas play. Go to bed early, and then the next morning, wake up, you know, pray, see what Santa Claus brought, made these checklists, and we decorated it with graphics. And for several days in advance, we showed him the checklist. And now that's part of our family ritual. Samuel has his checklist with him Christmas Eve and Christmas morning, and he'll say, check, as he checks it off. But he got that point about the Christmas play, and he didn't know what that was. So Rachel got out Living Scriptures or something and showed the nativity story five or six times, and they wrote the play together, and he was so excited to have a part. And they practiced it. I'll tell you, it made this dad just bawl because there's something that was so vital to me that my son, as you said, they don't get abstract concepts like faith and religion all the time. But for him to understand that this was about the birthday of Jesus and to want to tell that story himself, that for us was a wonderful, wonderful success. And it was because you taught us a basic working strategy. My daughter was inspired to apply it in this situation. And so suddenly those aspects of Christmas weren't so difficult. Now, Katie, I know that you've worked a lot with instruction and helping disabled children of all kinds in a church context. Mm-hmm. Let's take a few minutes to talk about what ward leaders and teachers and primary presidents, ward families, can do to support families with children with these kind of challenges.
Sure. You know, I think the biggest thing that we're seeing that really benefits families is when they really feel like the leaders have a desire to work with their child with a disability. So the church has several resources on their website to to learn about individuals with various disabilities, and there's videos you can watch, and there's all kinds of trainings. And we've found that when those church leaders go to the parents and say, I've read this, I've gone here, do you have additional information?
And how does it apply to your child?
Right, and how can I make this work?
We'll get that link on our website, but it's disabilities.lds.org/disabilities, and you can get it in various languages. It's not just autism. It's intellectual disability, learned disability, mental illness, physical disability, speech and language disorders. I mean, there are wonderful resources there. They help teachers craft lessons.
Right.
They help song leaders in primary know what to do. But I loved what you said. You know, the church does this all the time. It supports families. It provides resources. But it's up to the families. And every child is different. And the scenario you sketched out where a leader would come and say, I've read this, right? They've done their part. They tried to magnify their calling. They've got the information. How does that work for Samuel? Or how would that work for Matthew? And then your stewardship, you have the right to be inspired for your child. And they have the right to be inspired in that calling. You can bring these things together.
Right. Because it can be very isolating, as I'm sure you're aware, to have a child with a disability in a church setting. Mm-hmm. And so if I know you care, you know, that's going to help me want to be there more. That's going to help me feel like, oh, I should just take my child out and not make life so hard for everybody
else. I'll tell you,
the
first few Christmas parties we took Samuel to after his autism had really manifested itself, we didn't even make it through the meal. And one of us was out in the foyer with him crying, and one of us finally went home. And at first, it didn't seem like anyone cared. It was pretty miserable. Of course, you know, children have great capacity to progress and develop, and we've been very blessed with him, and he now likes those things. But, you know, our ward family's been wonderful. Once they understood, they always cared, but once they understood, you know, the day, this isn't about Christmas, but the day that Samuel took his training wheels off, we did not ride anywhere in the neighborhood without people coming out of their houses. Samuel, cool, you got your training wheels off. You know, the bishopric and just people in the ward. Because we did what many parents did. We didn't want to talk about it. That's the biggest mistake a parent can make. I know firsthand how hard it is and how much you don't want people to know about the problem. But if you are in a loving community, and that's what a ward family should be and can be, you're just going to lighten your burden. Because everyone's going to come together to help you. Robin,
well,
any thoughts on that?
A big part of the gospel is bearing one another's burdens. Relief Society is all about service. And if you don't open up and let people share that burden, then they don't have an opportunity to help you. A lot of parents are worried that their child will get labeled. We mentioned in an earlier episode that chances are your child will do something that will label themselves. Some inappropriate behavior or a loud noise or something like that. If family members and ward members are educated, then they won't look at it as a label. They'll look at it as what it is. It's a behavior. It's your child coping with some stimulus that they can't otherwise cope with.
You know, I wish I'd had time to ask Elaine this in our previous episode. That was a very full episode. But sometimes you have to deal with these things with humor. And Elaine was once kind of searching for autism resources, and she found this T-shirt for her child and said, I'm not rude or loud or obnoxious. I have autism. What's your problem? You know? But, you know, if people realize that's just an aspect, you know, our ward family has been so wonderful at seeing what Samuel does well and focusing on that. And so – and holidays are a time when people are generally in a more giving, understanding, and loving mode anyway. So, you know, if you in your neighborhood or your ward or your social circle haven't had much success yet opening up or recruiting help, this is actually a time when people are soft touch, okay? This is the time to say, you know, we have a hard time at Christmas. We would love your help.
And start with your visiting teachers. If, you know, moms of kids with autism, start small. If you don't feel like announcing it in Relief Society or that type of thing, you can hold maybe a special fireside. Do it in a smaller setting. Start with your child's teachers directly. But the key is to be able to open up and share and let people in. They won't be serving you out of pity. They won't be serving you because they feel bad for you. They're serving you because that's what the gospel is about.
As we come towards the end of the episode, I would like to focus on something you said earlier, Robin, which is children with autism potentially can struggle with religion and matters of faith because they tend to have a hard time with abstract things. But you actually kind of self-corrected at one point. You said you can feel faith. you know, but it's abstract. And, you know, I think the feelings we have at Christmas, at Easter, and other holidays, as we work with our children to define what they're feeling. You know, it's just what we do on missions. You know, you can't describe faith like you can't describe what salt tastes like. But when the children are feeling something and you can help them define it and put a label on it, our experience with our son, and that's one experience with one child, has been we've helped him understand religion. And, you know, he now knows about baby Jesus. And he now knows about his Father in heaven. And he knows how he feels when we light those Advent candles and when we sing the Christmas songs. And so I feel like it should be for all of us that Christmas is a wonderful opportunity to teach and help people have those kind of experiences. And once again, it's just our experience. You talked about concrete things we can do like make new traditions, our funny little Christmas Eve picnic with all our weird foods. Just the other day, and we're not even to Thanksgiving yet when we're recording this, but someone said, it's going to be Christmas Eve and it's going to be great. I said, well, what do you like about Christmas Eve? And he started just going down his checklist that he had, of course, memorized. He looks at things one time and remembers them. And he says, and then we're going to have our special picnic. And I said, but Sammy, aren't those weird foods? Yes, but Mama's going to make me hot dogs and pizza. So we still do all the things we like and we have all our traditional foods, but Mama's going to make two things he likes and he's perfectly satisfied. Sitting there eating his little hot dogs and a piece of pizza while we're eating, you know, seafood and, you know, baked this and all these kind of hors d'oeuvre things.
And you know what? Maybe Rachel, when she has kids, will have pizza and hot dogs too.
Yeah.
Because that's the tradition she now grew up with.
Right. But it's been a great joy to us to have gone from 2 years of hellish Christmas to a year where it worked and now a year where he was the first one a couple months early to say Christmas is coming. And, of course, he knows how many days and probably how many hours because it's part of the schedule. You know, sometimes, particularly in the LDS community, we're outside of the temple. Rituals and ceremonies aren't a big part of our practice. I think we sometimes miss the potential of holidays. And I think we probably have family rituals, which is what's so wonderful because every family needs to determine for a child with special needs what those rituals are. But I think we still teach our children, we try to help them feel the spirit of the holiday, but we also let them share the excitement and we let them be kids within their realms. Katie, any final things you would like to add to any of that?
I think a big thing I always say when I'm instructing primary teachers or school teachers is we are so much more alike than we are different. And I think oftentimes if we choose to love the child and to learn what we can to help them, we're going to find that that child is a lot more like all the other children we're working with. There's just might be a few things we have to do to help support them, but it's okay, and things can be really wonderful because we are more alike.
I'll tell you,
different.
It killed me when Samuel was first diagnosed. When people kept telling me this was going to be a wonderful blessing from our family, I thought I didn't want that blessing. I wanted a normal child. I wanted normal blessings. We've come to that point on our own. But we came to that point. You know, now when we see a child having a meltdown in a restaurant or a child having a problem in the mall, we say a little prayer for that mom or wonder what that child's facing. So it can make you more sensitive. And what this is making me think of is having to take the time to think out the rituals and the holiday for Samuel. It's making me ask myself, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And what is Rachel getting out of it? What is Elaine getting out of it? And then in other aspects of my life, professionally, teaching, whatever, it makes me a little bit more sensitive that, as you say, every person has something in common, but we also need to find out what's unique about every person. It's not just about the child with autism, or the child with Down syndromes, or the child that's physically handicapped, or the adult with depression, or bipolar disorder. All of us have unique strengths and unique challenges, and it becomes us as men and women of Christ to look for those things and be there for each other.
And what a beautiful time to do that at Christmas time,
yeah,
to really magnify that.
Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. And audience, thank you for joining us for this episode of Mormon Identities, where we've been talking about Christmas and other disabilities with autism. I am Eric Huntsman, reminding you to remember who we are as Latter-day Saints, what we believe, and how we live. Until next time, remember that today is the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it.
You've been listening to Mormon Identities here on the Mormon Channel. To download or podcast this episode, please click on our homepage, radio.lds.org.